Great. Thanks very much, everybody. And welcome. Good morning, Bordar Pab. I'm Auriel Miller. I'm the director of the IWA. Delightful to see you all today in today's meeting, because it's a meeting, not a webinar. And for those of you who have just joined us, some of our delegates today have had the wrong link. So they're coming in as my colleague, Jack Watkins. Do please rename yourselves by pressing on the blue button in the top right-hand corner of your screen, renaming yourselves with your name and your organisation. The bonus is that you'll get to see each other and see who's in the room today, but all delegates have been muted. It's just the panellists who are unmuted. So apologies for the technological mix-up this morning. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, the IWA is Wales's leading independent think tank with a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change through policy research and advocacy, our online and print publications, which provide platforms for robust comment and debate, and our agenda setting events. We're a membership organisation with members right across the country and much further afield too. We're funded by our members, the events that we run ourselves, and independent trusts and foundations. Today's event is kindly possible thanks to the support of the Carnegie UK Trust. This is now the 14th in our ongoing series of Rethinking Wales events. In March 2020, we responded to the rapid changes that were forced on us all by COVID-19 by setting up these events as a way to generate discussion and learning in a difficult time. We bring together a range of people to highlight the ways in which the pandemic is creating new challenges and exposing existing ones. To date, we've used these online sessions to address a range of topics, including social care, young people's wellbeing, the plight of cultural venues, and Wales's management of the pandemic. A little bit of housekeeping before we get stuck in. Do please rename yourselves if you haven't already. Don't worry if you can't manage that, it's fine. We'll use the Q&A section for questions. We really encourage you to have a chat in the chat box, but please remember that all chat and questions are recorded. The hashtag for the series is hashtag Rethinking Wales, and the recording will go on our YouTube channel afterwards. For today's event, we're turning to a reform in Welsh education that has been years in the making. It's now 7 years since the publication of Professor Graham Donaldson's landmark review of curriculum and assessment in Wales. Since that time, thousands of hours have been spent by teachers and school leaders, academics, civil servants and administrators to develop the framework for what we will teach our children in the future. This curriculum puts forward a number of important concepts that represent a major shift in how schools operate. In particular, the concept of subsidiarity is front and centre, meaning that schools will have much more of a say over the content of the curriculum, being able to develop their own resources and being empowered to reflect local knowledge and experience. The curriculum also represents a heightened sensitivity to learners' well-being. Health and well-being is placed alongside languages and literacy and science and technology as a core area of learning and experience, representing a move away from provision designed around individual subject disciplines. However, as the GCSE awarding last summer amply illustrated, the curriculum has to fit alongside a robust and fair assessment regime. Our current qualification system for 16-year-olds requires reform to meet the expectations set by the radical new curriculum. We have some late changes to our panel. Unfortunately, Emma George from Qualifications Wales and Stuart James from Bluestone National Park Resort have both sent apologies because they're both ill, as something I'm sure we can all appreciate. Right now, we send them both our best wishes. Instead, we're delighted to be joined by Oliver Stacey from Qualifications Wales, who's managing the project of qualification reform for the new curriculum, and will be telling us how people can get involved in these reforms through current and future consultation and engagement. We're also joined by Professor David Stacey of the Urathrova Institute at University of Wales Trinity St David's, a leading expert on curriculum who's seen the long project of reform from various different perspectives. And no, Oliver and Dave are not related, and yes, we have checked. Welcome to you both. Finally, we're joined by Kerry Reid of the community interest company Parents Voices in Wales, who works tirelessly to speak up for parents and learners' interests with a focus on wellbeing and neurodiversity. Welcome, Kerry. So to set the scene, we're going to begin with a short presentation by Oliver on the proposed reforms. I'm going to hand over to you now, Oliver, and I suggest that everybody else goes to speak of you so that you just see Oliver on your screen. Oliver, you should be co-host, so you should be able to share your screen now.
Thank you. Excellent, thank you. So hopefully a PowerPoint will come up. And I'm just 10 minutes to explain and sort of outline some of the proposals we're suggesting at the moment on the future range of qualifications in Wales and to set the scene for today. But firstly, I'd just like to run through some of the decisions that have already been made. We made in our first consultation, which concluded last year, which kind of gives some context. So we had a high level consultation, and from that consultation, we decided on some guiding principles that would shape the future offer in Wales for qualifications at 16. And there were three principles. Firstly, that they should relate to and support the aims of the new curriculum and its purposes, and that they should be available both in Welsh and English, which is kind of an increased expectation on current arrangements. And that they should contribute to a coherent and inclusive offer. By that, we mean that there should be something for everyone, regardless of ability range within the future offer. We also consulted on whether we should keep the GCSE name. And there was strong support for keeping the GCSE brand here in Wales. But just because we're keeping the GCSE brand doesn't mean that GCSEs will look and feel exactly the same in the future as they are now. There's considerable flexibility and elasticity within the GCSE brand. And finally, we agreed that the Skills Challenge Certificate at Key Stage 4, the reforms to that piece of that qualification would be, the timeline would be moved into this project so that reforms to the Key Stage 4 Skills Challenge Certificate run in parallel with reforms to GCSEs. Just to remind people who might not be familiar with the new curriculum, it's organised around six areas of learning and experiences, which are listed on the slide. What I'll do now is outline our proposals for qualifications within each of these six areas of learning and experience. So firstly, in terms of expressive arts, we're planning to review and reform the existing GCSEs in art and design, drama and music. These GCSEs are popular subjects at GCSE with clear progression routes onto post-16 study. Through our engagement, stakeholders have been keen to retain these subjects, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the content and assessment methods will stay as they are currently. The new curriculum for expressive arts has a digital media as one of the components. So we're proposing a new GCSE in film and digital media. This would replace the current GCSE in media studies, which has a slightly more focus on print media and more traditional methods. So reflecting the general trends in life, we think a digital media qualification would be an exciting new addition to the range. The new curriculum also has dance explicitly mentioned in the expressive arts. So we're proposing that there should be a choice of qualifications that assess dance within the offer. It's unlikely that given the number of people that take dance, we could help for a bespoke GCSE made for Wales GCSE in it, but there are other opportunities for qualifications in other areas that would assess dance. And finally, for some learners, they told us they'd like a multidisciplinary approach to this area. They're interested in more than one of the disciplines. So we're committed to offering a choice of qualifications that combine different areas of expressive arts. Performing arts would be an obvious example of such a qualification. Then, in terms of health and well-being, which has already been alluded to in the introduction, this is a really exciting and quite prominent area of the new curriculum. We've decided not to create a bespoke GCSE qualification in health and well-being. And there are a number of reasons for this. Firstly, health and well-being tackles many really important issues, including physical well-being, emotional well-being, and mental health, as well as how you can influence the well-being of others. And we just don't think a GCSE style assessment lends itself to the content. And there would be a risk that a GCSE and it would narrow what's taught in schools. So we want to give schools flexibility to teach it in a way that's most appropriate to the needs of their learners. That said, though, there are other qualifications in this space that speak to particular aspects of health and well-being. For example, PE speaks to the physical well-being, as food and nutrition as well, and health and social care and childcare. We'd be committed to reviewing and reforming and refreshing these qualifications, whilst also acknowledging that they only assess or speak to part of this area of learning and experience. Then in terms of humanities, the GCSEs in business, geography, history and religious studies are very popular. There's high take up of these qualifications and they've got clear routes to post 16 study, whether at A level or other routes at post 16. And stakeholders have said that they value the discipline specific subjects. So therefore we're proposing to retain these. There would be reforms to them. Some stakeholders, for example, have told us that there's a lot, they're very content heavy. It's difficult sometimes to get through all the content in these subjects at the moment in a GCSE course. So we'd be looking at refreshing and reviewing the content, but retaining those subjects. The new curriculum also speaks about social studies as the fifth discipline within humanities. At present, there isn't a social studies GCSE in Wales. So we're committed to, if viable, proposing to develop a new GCSE in social studies, which could address really key issues like sustainable development, inequalities. And if you think about topics such as Extinction Rebellion and Black Lives Matter, it's clear that young people are very interested in some of these issues. Finally, the humanities area of learning has really worked hard to develop the curriculum around interdisciplinary nature as well. So we're looking to potentially create a new integrated GCSE in humanities, which would be genuinely thematic and looking at topics through a thematic lens. So you could think of topics such as globalization or migration, which you could view through the lenses of each of the disciplines within humanities. We're slightly less confident on the viability of this qualification. It's been tried in the past and not proven to be particularly popular. So at the moment, we'd need to do more work if people are positive about this to see whether it could be a viable option alongside the subject disciplines. Moving on to languages, literacy and communication. This is a really big area of learning. What we're planning to do here is combine the language and literature GCSEs that currently exist in English and Welsh into a single qualification, a combined language and literature in English and a combined language and literature in Welsh. If we were to combine them, we feel that they would probably need to be a bit larger than a single GCSE though, to accommodate the content from two separate GCSEs. So we're thinking that this might be along the size of 1.5 GCSEs, although the precise size would be established in the next phase of the project when we look at content and assessment. We think there are advantages to this. Literature reinforces language and vice versa. So we think there'd be efficiencies and synergies by combining the two. It's a common approach internationally. Also for learners who are in English medium schools, who currently study for a Welsh second language GCSE, we're planning on proposing to develop a larger Welsh GCSE designed for those in English contexts. So again, this would probably be about 1.5 GCSEs in size, so comparable in size to the language and literature qualification. And this would reflect the priorities of the Welsh language priorities and Welsh government targets to have 1 million Welsh speakers by 2050. In addition to these, we're planning a set of small bite-size qualifications which assess Welsh language skills, particular skills. So it could be, for example, speaking and listening rather than trying to assess all four language skills. And they could be taken in addition to a GCSE to support progression to further study in Welsh. Currently in Wales, GCSEs in French, German and Spanish are the most popular international languages studied. Therefore, we're planning to review and reform those made for Wales GCSEs that already exist in this area. And we think there are opportunities with digital technology to make them perhaps more engaging and dynamic, but we would plan to retain those three languages as the ones on offer here in Wales. We know that languages are declining in popularity at GCSE level, not just in Wales, but across the UK. So we're proposing a small set of bite-size made for Wales qualifications in a range of international languages, which learners could take either alongside or instead of a GCSE. So this would support language learning beyond the age of 14 for those that don't necessarily want to commit to doing a full GCSE in a language. Finally, the new curriculum also talks about British Sign Language and the importance of sign language in communication. So we're committed to making available a range of British Sign Language qualifications for learners here in Wales. In England, they're currently designing a GCSE in British Sign Language. And should that be approved, we'd look at how we could make that available for learners in Wales as well. In terms of mathematics and numeracy then, so in maths and numeracy, there are currently two GCSEs in Wales at the moment. There's a mathematics GCSE and a numeracy GCSE. We're proposing to combine them into a single qualification which again, we think similar to the language and literature, would probably be about the size of 1.5 GCSEs. The reason for this is the new curriculum doesn't make a distinction between mathematics and numeracy, they're considered together. Also, the two existing GCSEs have substantial overlap, so actually we think that combining them would reduce the assessment burden. We also think that there should be we're proposing a new single unit, a small qualification, that just assesses the learner's numerical proficiency using an on-screen method. So we know that for some learners, a C grade in maths is very difficult to achieve. But actually a C grade in maths is actually the passport. You need that grade to access a lot of things post 16, including apprenticeships. So we think that actually proposing a small qualification which assesses number skills rather than some of the more abstract concepts such as trigonometry and calculus is a really good thing. So that we think that that would be something that would be really valuable for learners on that sort of the D grade, CD, so that they can demonstrate their numerical skills without some of the more abstract things. We're also proposing that it's on screen and on demand, which means learners could take it when they're ready, rather than have to wait till the end of year 11, for example, to take it. And finally, in maths, there's a very popular additional maths qualification, level 2. So this qualification is taken by learners who are very able mathematicians who want to study maths post 16. It's very popular, so we're proposing to make this a Made for Wales qualification so that we can guarantee its availability through the medium of Welsh. And then on to science and technology. So this is a big area with lots of qualifications. And we've already just reformed or just about to introduce new GCSEs in built environment and digital technology. So we plan to, because they've only just been developed, we look at the content but think that they should still be fit for purpose. And we're also planning to review and reform the GCSEs in computer science and design and technology. Again, these are popular GCSEs, but there might be opportunities to refresh the content and assessment in those. And the new curriculum mentions engineering specifically in the What Matters statements, and we're planning to develop a new GCSE in engineering and manufacturing, which would speak to that part of the curriculum. And then moving on to science, what we're planning here is a new common science GCSE for everyone. At the moment, there's a variety of science qualified GCSEs. There's applied science, a conventional double award science, and the separate biology, chemistry, and physics GCSEs. What we're proposing is to simplify the offer so that there's a common route through science for all learners. However, we know that for some learners with a keen interest and aptitude in science, they might want to do more science. So we're proposing to introduce a set of small science qualifications that could be taken alongside the new GCSE science qualification. These would add breadth and maybe look at particular applications of science. It wouldn't necessarily be at GCSE, they wouldn't be called GCSEs. And then finally, the integral skills. So the skills challenge certificate, we're proposing that skills challenge certificate for learners at 16 at Key Stage 4 should be made more simple and manageable, and particularly focus on these integral skills which are mentioned in the curriculum. And those skills are mentioned, are kind of listed on the slide. So that's a real whistle stop through the presentation. But just to say, these are only proposals. So we're very much interested in hearing your views on on our proposals, what you make of them. We'd encourage you to go to our website where you can respond to the consultation, and it's available till the 9th of April. We've already had, I think, lots of comments, but we want as many people as possible because this is obviously a crucial shift. This marks a big, important juncture in the new curriculum and in qualifications here in Wales. Thank you.
Great, thank you very much indeed, Oliver. So I'm going to bring in the rest of the panel now take a step back and looking at the bigger picture. And now I know that some people who have joined us while I was talking at the beginning and maybe before Oliver did his presentation will be aware that they come in under a different link. So if you want to rename yourself on your link so that you come up as who you actually are in the chat, now's the time. And do please use the Q&A and the chat room to, I know that there's some stuff being shared already in the chat, which is great. Kerry, can I come to you first, please? Because I know you work hard to draw attention to how accessible school provision is for all learners. So let's start from that perspective, particularly those who are neurodiverse. Could you talk us through, please, what kinds of changes you would like to see coming about as part of the new curriculum when it comes to assessment reform?
Yes, thanks, Ariel. I think, first of all, to address the core principle of the curriculum reform based on collaboration and co-production with communities. So in that spirit, I thank you for the invitation today. We also are keen to look at the four purposes of the curriculum, and we talk about the ambitions of capable learners, the creative contributors, ethically informed and healthy individuals. And we know that these four purposes can only be fulfilled in an inclusive environment. And that inclusion of all learners should be on a strength-based approach. So what we are, I suppose I should talk about neurodiversity very briefly and to say that the Welsh Government ALN transformation document states that there are 23% of our learners are neurodiverse, and that involves learners who are ADHD, autism, developmental language delay, dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyspraxia, etc. And when we just talk about learners, we also forget that 20% of the teaching staff are neurodiverse. So when we're talking about school environments, we're actually talking about staff and learners together. And therefore, we are looking at a whole school approach in terms of providing a balance for all learners, meeting the health and well-being of staff and learners, but also making the curriculum accessible to those that have additional needs. We know that currently the curriculum looks at deficits, so those that aren't suitable for exam-based outcomes may, for example, not reach their full potential through education. And yet we know that over 30% of our entrepreneurs in the UK are neurodiverse. So there's a lot of potential that is actually not being currently met. So we're quite excited about the new curriculum reform in that we believe that the children's United Nations Conventions for the Rights of Children should be mandatory, really, and cut across the hoop through the whole curriculum, because we think that that will help the improvement and accountability of for school improvement of the curriculum, with having, say, student ambassadors that would represent the diversity of all children in terms of learning, ethnicity, LGBT. So we believe in diversity, not just in learning and neurodiversity, but diversity. So we're looking at the whole child in a whole school approach. So we want to see Sally Holland, I've actually put it in a chat, a link to her position statement on the United Nations Convention's Rights of the Child and how that could be implemented and embedded across the curriculum. We are absolutely delighted that Kirsty Williams, as we know, we've worked very hard in increasing awareness of neurodiversity, and for people to move away from looking at children through a single lens and just looking at people through autism or ADHD, and understanding that we're complex beings and co-occurrence of conditions is more common than a single condition. So we're really excited that Kirsty Williams has agreed to a mandate to roll out a neurodiversity education and training across all sectors of education, so that teachers will be skilled to be aware of behaviours, learning deficits, and how that those gaps can be closed with the curriculum reform. We're very excited that Welsh Government have just announced an 8.8 million to bridge the gap for ALN learners that have fallen behind in the COVID lockdown. So obviously those vulnerable learners will have missed out with remote learning, where their needs haven't been met at home because maybe they had a TA and they've got working parents. So we're absolutely delighted with that. And it shows a will in Wales to address neurodiversity, and that this curriculum will be a curriculum for all learners.
Thank you. Yeah. I want to pick up on one of those things around and I'm going to go to Dave with this, please, because I know that you know, there's obviously huge disruption over the last year. You can't overstate that, and the new curriculum, you know, scheduled to be taught in schools from 2022. I think my son is going to be one of the first ones coming through it. And the disruption that there has been to schools' regular work and all the differential impacts that that's had on children, we're aware of that, and it will take time to both pull that through and address it, you know, decades potentially. This conversation today is about reform to how we measure children coming through the new curriculum. Could you talk us through what sort of risks you see in that process of reform being slowed down, please? Because there is just so much to deal with at the moment. And I know that there's conversation in the chat about, you know, the vision and the pedagogy. This conversation is about the assessment reform and how do we measure pupils' progress. Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things it might be helpful just that I know we'll come to some of the stuff in the chat in a second, is I think we need to recognise there's a difference between assessment throughout the curriculum and then the exit qualifications at the end. And I think we need to be mindful that we don't conflate those two. In terms then of risks of slowing down, I mean, I think there's always a tension, isn't there? And there has been since the publication of Successful Futures between the, come on, let's go and do this now, and the, oh, hang on a minute now, we need to wait and get everything sorted. And I've heard very convincing arguments from both sides of those. In terms of the current situations, one of the things that has often been brought up by schools as a barrier is a sense of schools are already very often feeling like they are at capacity. And one of the things that we've heard from lots of schools is we have to stop doing some things in order to create space to develop the new curriculum, new assessment, and so on and so forth. So if we're going to look for some potential silver linings as we start to emerge from this situation, one may be the fact that the COVID has forced us to stop doing some of the things that we did before. And it may be we choose to keep, we don't bring them back onto the table to create some of that space to enable to move us forward. And I think the other opportunity is that before we get to the opportunity, the risk is that we have all of the schools trying to do their own thing. And that's very disconnected. And one of the things we are this morning, an example of that, you know, the use of technology to bring people together. Again, COVID has forced us just to put down those, you know, those problems, those issues and get collaborating with technology. And I think that, again, presents us with an opportunity. So, yes, there are some risks. Yes, schools are at capacity, beyond capacity in some cases. But I think what we have got is we can also view this as an opportunity as a reason to stop doing some of the things we've done before. And as we start to come out of the pandemic and as we start to think about what the next 12 months, 2 years are going to look like, you know, rather than going back to where we were before, look to where we would like ourselves to be from that blueprint from Successful Futures and the curriculum.
I guess the challenge then is that the headspace to do that when you're dealing with children coming back to school now and everything that needs to be shifted and changed as for the here and now for the children we have now rather than the ones who will be coming through in the future. I'm going to go to Oliver now, because you know we know that Successful Futures curriculum promises a much greater focus on learners' well-being and capabilities and a move away from teaching to the test, with a greater emphasis on areas of learning experience rather than traditional subject disciplines as you set out. But how are these proposed GCSEs going to live up to those radical expectations? Are they radical enough? And we're seeing some pushback already from the chat on that.
Really good question. So I think I'd start by saying, obviously, qualifications Wales have been really clear that the curriculum comes first and then the qualifications are driven by the curriculum rather than the other way around. That's why we've been we're only consulting now. Your question mentioned teaching to the test, which is interesting. And I'm just skimming some of the comments in the chat, we're talking about, oh, it's just same old exams. I think it's really important to note that actually we've got real opportunity to think about what the balance is between written exams versus other forms of assessment as we go forward. There's already a real variety of assessment methods used in GCSEs at the moment. People tend to think of written exams, but in subject like art, there is no written exam anyway at the moment. So we're looking at how we might be able to shift the balance in many subjects. Clearly in some subjects a written exam might still be a preferred option, but not in all. So there's things like oracy. Lots of people have told us that actually oracy skills, we value writing skills at the moment, they're overvalued in the assessments as opposed to some of the other skills. The integral skills, where appropriate, will be embedded within all the GCSE qualifications. And in terms of thinking about what the sort of what things are being assessed, what sort of, we're talking about, obviously the curriculum shifts a bit from lots of prescription of knowledge more to skills. So obviously that will need to be reflected in the way the assessments are developed. And again, that lends itself sometimes to not written exams, which you can't really assess directly many of these things. Experiences, again, it could be that there are sort of endorsements you expected to have experienced certain things, and then the assessment is a reflection on that, which could not isn't necessarily a written piece, but it could be an oral piece or something. So I think in the next stage of the project, when we're looking at the content and also the way that the qualifications are assessed, I think that's really where this thinking needs to come in. But I would stress that it's one of the next phase of the project: written exams, the role of teacher assessment, balance between flexibility and prescription. These are all things we're wrestling with at the moment, and that will be reflected when we start looking at this sort of content and approval criteria for GCSEs of the future. And also predictability as well is a big thing. If you rely on knowledge, not quite the knowledge heavy exams like we do now, they're quite predictable, and that lends itself to a teaching to the test approach, or could lead to, doesn't necessarily, but you can see why. So there are things there about assessing higher order skills in different ways as well. Although we need to be mindful that these qualifications need to be accessible for a very broad range of learners as well. So we need to be mindful. It's great to have lots of conceptual understanding and higher order skills, but that does increase the demand of a qualification. So there's lots of tensions that we're trying to balance here. And it will be different subjects.
Okay, thank you. Kerry, we want to really focus also on, you know, the issues that you brought up before in terms of COVID creating crisis for learners' mental health and well-being. Can you talk us through some of the problems that learners are currently facing and what more could be done to help as we go through the next few years, when we will have to have the assessments and the exams over the next few years for GCSEs, so we get to the reform coming through?
Yeah, well, I don't think the lockdown's been helpful, has it, in terms of the well-being and mental health of children. And Sally Holland, as you know, has done a coronavirus in May report, which in May 20 had over 23,000 participants to that survey. And the latest one in January 21 had 19,000, and for ages from 3 to 18. And the children and young people said how they felt unmotivated at home. They felt lonely. And of course they were missing their friends. And of course we have a problem then with accessing counselling, school-based counselling, because we were in lockdown. So in terms of the health and mental health and well-being of learners at the moment, will there be a catch-up? Will we be seeing the long-term effects of this? I don't think we know, really. The experts have asked us not to medicalise a normal reaction to an abnormal situation, and that being stressed when things are going wrong is completely normal. But what we do know is that a lot of the neurodiverse individuals who have got additional needs have struggled the most. So we're hoping now, with the Welsh Government Learning Gap funded, to bring those learners back up to where they need to be. And with the additional funding for mental health and wellbeing in school provision, we're hoping now that we can get those learners back on track so that they can continue going forwards with the curriculum reform to reach their full potential.
Thank you. Yes, and I think you're absolutely right. We don't know yet how this is going to play out. Dave, you know, just thinking about areas of learning that aren't captured in qualifications, and bearing in mind all these competing priorities that are immediate, how to what extent do you think they're going to become much less of a priority for schools, and what can be done to prevent this happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right to identify as a risk, and it's not a new risk. You know, schools have had, since the inception of the national curriculum, responsibilities for, you know, physical health through PE and PSE and all sorts. And I think the experience of learners in individual schools can be quite different, because one of the main accountability measures for schools is around examination performance, and there are some things, as Oliver said in the presentation, that aren't well met to traditional forms of qualifications. So I think one of the key things, and again we've heard this from lots of teachers along the way from pioneer schools and others, that one of the barriers to the successful implementation of this curriculum and qualifications reform and all the rest of it will be if we fail to create a more intelligent accountability system. And all the time that we are simply, just measuring the things that are easy to count, we're not counting the things that are particularly important to us. And I think there is some there are some grounds for optimism in some of the things that Qualifications Wales are saying around, you know, different types of qualifications, different size of qualifications, and indeed different things that we can put into and count as a GCSE. And it was something that certainly surprised me. I'd been teaching for a large number of years, and it was only really when I started to explore that last curriculum, the last qualifications review, that actually you look and see what you can do under the name of a GCSE is certainly a lot broader than I'd certainly ever seen from a classroom perspective. So I think it's mindful we don't assume that just because we've done it in the past, that we will carry on doing it. There are opportunities to be taken if we look for them.
Okay, and so the corollary to that is some of the new stuff. Oliver, I'm going to come to you with this, because, you know, we're all conscious that there have been some pretty high profile petitions to the Senate calling for the mandatory inclusion, for instance, of Welsh history and Black Asian minority ethnic history in the new curriculum. And the Welsh government's generally taken the view that the design of the new curriculum doesn't lend itself to the inclusion of mandatory topics, leaving teachers and schools with the freedom to draw on both local and global contexts. You talked a little bit about how that might be included in social studies, but can the reformed history GCSE help with that? And how difficult is that going to be for local teachers who may not have that broader either context or awareness, or it may not be as much of a local issue? How do you find your way through that?
A very good question. So in terms of the Welsh history, as an example, in terms of the humanities area in the curriculum guidance, you're quite right in saying that it doesn't specify a prescribed particular content, but it does say that within humanities, learners should be experiencing local, national and global contexts. So in that sense, you would expect in the local and the national to include some elements of Welsh history. In terms of, it's not necessarily for us to say it specify the content of which topic or which period, or is it castles in North Wales or Roman history in Caerleon, for example. There are examples where you would expect, the way the curriculum guidance has been written, you would expect to see some Welsh history. I mean, in terms of how you would design a GCSE in a subject like history, it could be that you're looking at a particular theme. So it could be something like cause and effect or continuity and change. And then schools could then, they have the freedom then to decide the topic, which would, the local topic or a topic that's relevant, which could illustrate that. And it would have to be on those three levels. So you could then, if it's not a particularly diverse part of Wales, a global context could then bring in some of these, some of the Black and minority history, for example. I would say it's not just an issue for history. We've spoken to lots of English and Welsh teachers about literature as well, and the sort of relatively narrow range of literature currently on the specifications, which doesn't fully reflect diversity and rather narrow. So there are ways it can be done, but we're clear that we don't want to specify too much content, because that goes against the grain of the curriculum. But at the same time, we need to provide a framework so that there is an element of consistency, because the grades, there needs to be comparability. An A grade in one school or one place needs to be comparable to an A grade somewhere else. That's vital to have the currency of the qualification and the public trust and confidence in it. So it's striking that right balance. But you can see in the context like history, there would be Welsh history, but maybe not specifying which particular topic or date.
Okay, so there's a huge challenge here for the teaching profession, isn't there, Dave? And how ready do you think the profession is for the reforms that are coming, and what kind of support do they need?
So in terms of how ready, I think very varied. And I think we can see that if we look across the different picture across our schools, across Wales, as some have rolled up their sleeves and got involved and got experimenting, and others have taken a slightly more cautious approach. In terms of what they need, resources is always going to be key. And that is primarily one of time. You know, teachers are time poor, and that will in turn require funding. But given the fact that, as far as I'm aware, we haven't yet discovered a magic money tree in Cardiff Bay, it's also going to require a little bit of careful consideration about what the barriers are and how we remove some of those. So how do we stop doing things that are not adding value? That, as we've seen a few comments in the chat already about things that perhaps are expensive and not adding a lot of value, in order to create the opportunities for teachers to come together and address some of those knowledge gaps that we've identified that undoubtedly exist within the profession.
OK, Okay, we're going to go to some of the questions that have been raised in the chat now. It's quarter to 12. And there's a question here from Catherine Williams. As a STEM background teacher, the tweaks for math, science and social sciences reads like a dumbing down of the curriculum. And this will have a knock-on effect and lead to the dumbing down on the progression routes at FE and HE. Is this a fair reflection? And if so, how can it be mitigated? Oliver, I think that's one for you, please.
Yeah, so taking those, so in terms of, for example, mathematics and numeracy, combining the two, many stakeholders we've engaged with say that there's some significant overlap between the two qualifications. There's a high assessment burden there, and actually you could combine them without losing a great deal. Language and literature, similarly, many countries, high-performing countries in tests like PISA, actually do combine language and literature into a single qualification. Examples would include New Zealand, some of the states in Australia and Scotland as well do this quite successfully, and the two support each other. And then in terms of science, that's a really interesting one. At the moment, the biology, chemistry and physics GCSEs are reasonably popular, but about 20% of secondary schools in Wales don't offer them. So it's really, there's an equity issue in terms of many learners don't get the opportunity to study these GCSEs. We think having a common core, and this is something that's popular with the learned societies as well, Royal Society of Chemistry, Institute of Physics, having a common core so that your options aren't narrowed at 14 or perceived to be narrowed by whether you can do biology and chemistry and physics or not. And then in terms of whether those science subjects offer better progression to A level, I said it's a very difficult one, because often when you look at the data, the profile of learners who take the separate biology, chemistry and physics GCSEs is quite high attaining anyway. So if you control for that factor, the difference in outcomes between those with double award and triple and the separate sciences isn't particularly much. And there's one other point just to make. In Wales, there's a very large core of GCSEs. If you're in a Welsh medium school, you will be doing Welsh language, Welsh literature, English language, English literature, two maths GCSEs, potentially three science GCSEs and a skills challenge certificate, which leaves very little choice for optionality in other subjects. So part of this is to try and reduce this a bit, to recognise that in some schools they've only got one or two options, and it would be nice to see them pursuing some subjects that they like as well. That's why the additional science top-up qualifications at least provide something for those that do like science and would like to study more. So there's lots of things to balance there.
It's a very pertinent question, being a parent of a year nine child, just having gone through that options conversation. You've got three and we wanted to do four. She wanted to do four. I'm going to come to a couple of comments that address performance measures. Becky Ball has noted that there are many valuable smaller qualifications contribute to learners' portfolio are not always incentivised by performance measures. And Calvin Jones has raised the problem that GCSEs are used by parents to compare schools in an imperfect and unfair way, as well as bringing up PISA and how that's used. Do you think Welsh Government need to change their approach to school accountability and performance? And Kerry, I'm going to come to you first and then Dave, please. So from your perspective, from a parent's perspective, Kerry.
Well, I've had a look at the non-statutory school improvement guidance, and I think what speaks to me is that we should be listening to the learners and having that kind of feedback loop where their accountability comes from whether they're meeting the evaluations from learners. And that can be achieved. I know I'm harping on about child's rights, but if we have a school council for those, we give them the confidence to use those rights in their voice, and we give them the confidence to be able to critique the provision that's been made to them. And I think that it's really important. It needs to be child centres, and I think it's really important that we have a national framework for evaluation, and that our learners within those communities can evaluate that the provision that's been given to them, and that of course would mirror to what Dave was saying about standards, about standards and making sure that it was equitable across the board, and that it's difficult to benchmark standards if everybody has that freedom to deliver, but that's okay as long as you have a benchmark of evaluation. And I think that would provide that loop to have equity across Wales as well.
Thanks, Kerry. And Dave, what do you think of that? And what do you think Welsh Government need to be doing? I could see that there's a question, there's a comment in the chat about the perceived gulf between the Future Generations Commissioner and the Act and the proposals from Qualifications Wales. What's your take?
Yeah, I think I'll perhaps leave Oliver to pick up that direct question. There's probably one more for him than me. I'm just going to pick up the comments you drew from the chat originally. I think the two things I've just scribbled down is one, you know, we know that accountability is a problem, but we also know that, you know, intelligent accountability systems are hard to design. And, you know, politicians and schools can find themselves stuck between, you know, on a rock and a hard place of these good intentions and some quite shockingly poor headlines in the media on some occasions. I think in terms of the PISA thing, I think we have to be more internationally informed than we've been in the past. Wales suffers from a tendency to just look over the border and assume that whatever's happening in England, we should be doing as well. And I know, you know, IWA have been saying for years about the
we're
issue.
Not doing.
Yeah, exactly.
We're
but
not
it's clear.
Doing.
Yes, but clearly linked to a lack of media here. You know, we still hear, we don't know how many years is it since we got rid of SATs, and yet still in schools we'll hear parents talking about SATs once a year because it's on the front page of the Mail or the Sun or whatever it is. So I don't think we need to perhaps be more internationalist, and then alongside that grow a little bit more confidence to say no, this is what we're doing because we've chosen the best of these things from around here, and this is what we think works for us. But I think in terms of the future commissioner's report, I think that's probably one for Oliver.
Okay, let's pick that up straight away then, Oliver. Is it radical enough? Are you not looking clearly enough at what the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act requires?
Well, I would say that I think that we're sort of only partly way through this project at the moment. In terms of some of the things that we've already decided, we had a very robust public conversation last year in our first consultation on whether to retain GCSEs and whether qualifications at 16, what they should look like. So that was, we got broad support for that. So that gave us the mandate to kind of, for the next phase of the project. In terms of what they look like and wellbeing, we're acutely aware of the sort of the pressures on learners of having everything sort of at the end of year 11. And so that's why things like the sort of frequency and mode of assessment we'll be looking at as well. So that it's not all kind of on a 90-minute exam in the summer in a hall necessarily. So there are things we're doing. We do need to be proportionate in the changes we make. And these are changes for this first round of reform. It could be that once the curriculum's established and embedded, more changes. Typically, qualifications have a life cycle of about 7 years. So there'll be opportunities to review and things will likely change further in the future, particularly in things like digital assessment as things move on there, as an example, which might make things more... lend itself to more continuous assessment or less one-off events.
So there's that's a neat segue into a comment from and a question from Linda Rogers, which is, does the integral nature of the new curriculum not point to a continuity of assessment, building a picture of the pupil over time in a cumulative process? And I can see some nods, but I'm going to come to you, Kerry, first on that one. That sense of pulling things back from the end of year 11, so that it's more cumulative over time.
Yeah, I don't really know what to say to that. I think that's probably something I would hand a hot potato over to Oliver and Dave.
Okay, fair enough. Dave, let's come to you.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything we've said here that precludes that. We're talking here about, you know, the exit point and notwithstanding the excellent questions in the chat about the value of those qualifications at 16. If we have assumed and if we have taken that the political steer is those need to be maintained, then the question I think now is, as we start to think about what those are going to look like, what the current system has and was pointed out from all the way back in 2015 and beyond, was it's very fragmented. So you've got the foundation phase outcomes and then you've got key stage two and then you've got something in key stage three, which might be about levels and might be about preparing for GCSEs. Actually, if we've got this sense of, Graham Donaldson talks about a clear line of sight from kind of into school to exit and moving on, then I don't think there's anything in these proposals, either for the curriculum or the qualifications, that precludes that idea of thinking about continuity of development and assessment. In fact, I think it probably steers us closer towards it, notwithstanding that it may well be something that we have to signal more strongly because it is a new idea for many schools and many teachers.
Okay. I want to pick up on a question from Shiva in the chat about employers, and we had hoped to have somebody representing employers on the panel, particularly focusing on local people in Pembrokeshire and the tourism industry. So apologies that hasn't been possible today for understandable reasons. Just thinking about that transition to work then, Oliver, should employers be doing much more to feed into the curriculum and qualifications? You know, one of the things that's come through our collective experience of the last year, two of the many things have come through. One is obviously the exacerbation of existing inequalities on the one hand, and how that relates to place as well, very, very clearly. But secondly, that place is also so important in terms of where you work, where you build your life, your chunk of your future. And employers being clear with schools in their patch what kind of skills they need for the economy of the future. So could you talk to us a bit about whether employers should be doing more to feed into the curriculum and qualifications? How would they know whether pupils have the kinds of skills that they're looking for, particularly for pupils who don't go on to further higher education?
Absolutely. So when we engage extensively with employers as part of a kind of stakeholder engagement, and typically often it's the softer skills that people say that they're probably lacking sometimes in learners. It might be that they've got the content knowledge is there, but actually it's some of the softer skills they need in the workplace. So I think there's definitely a role. I mean, there's many opportunities, and as we go on to the next stage of our project, we'll be engaging with employers in terms of how they can input into what some of the content should be. A good example would be this new numerical proficiency qualification. Obviously, what numerical skills employers would need of expected of a person at 16, that would be really important to define what goes into that qualification. We don't want it to become enormous, but some of those core skills that you'd expect most people to be able to do, like percentages or rates of change, those sort of things. And so definitely there, and we've spoken to schools, we've been to some schools in Port Talbot about the links with Tata, and just sort of important and understanding what the needs of big employers. Obviously, that's a very obvious example in one particular location, but in other areas where there's a far greater number of small and medium sized enterprises, what they are. So it's important then, as we go to the next stage, that we get that input to help us to shape those qualifications. But yeah, that's clearly vital, because obviously these qualifications are. One of the vision of the project is that they prepare people for life, learning and work. So therefore, it's essential to get employers input into them.
And that will look and feel very different in different parts of the country. I want to pick up on a comment from Sally Power in the chat, which sort of talks to both the attainment gap and issues around inequalities too. So should we, and this is probably a question for all of you, please. So should we be prepared for the eventuality that performance might dip? So she shared an example from the foundation phase that while it increased attainment and well-being overall, it did nothing to address the attainment gap. And in fact, the gender gap widened considerably. Dave, do you think that's likely to happen?
It's certainly a risk, isn't it? And I think one of the things is we always have to be mindful of how we choose to define performance. With any set of values, we have to be careful. We can look for the statistics to support the argument we want if we're not careful. I think we need to be always mindful in these comparisons that comparisons over time are hard because we've got no control. What would have happened if we hadn't made that? So I think that's always something we need to be mindful of. But I think one of the hopes for this new system would be that if we are evaluating and reflecting and changing on a much shorter time scale, then hopefully these things can be picked up and addressed far earlier than they could be in the current kind of 7 to 10 year cycle of curriculum and qualifications reform that we've experienced in the past.
So that plays in nicely, Kerry, to your feedback loop, doesn't it, in terms of...
Yeah, and I also want to say about the environment, actually, and how we need to start looking at more nurturing environments, because we know it's all about relationships. The T4CYP programme, which is a part of Public Health Wales, is looking at early health and enhanced support, which is a framework which will be rolled out in the future, looking at a whole system approach. So when we have a graduated response in schools where a learner is struggling, what we're looking at is for early support and intervention and a multidisciplinary team using the regional partnership boards as a nucleus for referral. And what we're looking for then is for early help, and training schools to provide nurturing, empowering, safe and trusted environments so that those attainment gaps will be limited.
Thank you. Oliver, this issue about whether performance might dip.
Yeah, so there's a well-established phenomenon in assessment called the sawtooth effect, where actually when a new qualification or assessment is introduced, there's a dip generally, and then for the first few years, it then recovers back to the level that it was previously at. So there are ways you can manage this. There's different technical standards, maintenance methods you can use to sort of maintain the standard over time so that those learners in those first few years of a new cohort, of a new curriculum, aren't disadvantaged by being obviously kind of teachers are less familiar with what they're teaching and the content and things. So there are methods that can be applied, statistical methods and things to help adjust for that, to ensure that there's the standard is maintained and that learners aren't unfairly disadvantaged because they're kind of the first cohort to do something new. But clearly for some new subjects, a new standard has to be set. We don't have a standard for some of the subjects because they don't exist at the moment. So we'll have to create a standard for those subjects.
So the key challenge there in terms of trust and how people trust those new qualifications coming through. We've hit 12 o'clock and the post-it note on my door, which says don't come into the kitchen, please, is going to lose its power if it had any in the first place. We haven't got to all the questions. So I'm going to wrap up now. Thank you very much indeed for everybody for joining the conversation today. I know that there's been a lot of chat and some sparky conversation in the chat too. It's obviously something that gets people going because it's so important. I suspect this conversation is going to run for a good while yet, and I would hope it does. I'd like to thank our panellists for giving us their time today. Oliver Stacey from Qualifications Wales, Kerry Reid from Parents Voices in Wales, and Dave Stacey from Trinity St David, University of Wales Trinity St David. Thank you very much to our funding partner, the Carnegie UK Trust. Thank you to everybody in the room for coming as well. Apologies for the technological mix-up at the beginning. We won't be doing that again. And thank you obviously my one final reminder is to get advance notice of all IWA events. Do please join us as a member at iwa.wales, about us, support us. The sun is out, at least in Cardiff. I hope it is out wherever you are and you enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Good afternoon. Thank you.